Let's see what the stew has for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, the Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. Today we have Jared, Chris, and myself, Ange, and we're going to talk about Jared's review of Sentinel Comics, the role-playing game starter kit, and superhero RPGs in general. Before we dive into the main topic, though, let's ask our get-to-know-gnome question. Chris, Jared, which superhero universe would you prefer to live in? Marvel's, DC's, some other comics? And does your answer change if you don't have superpowers?
Do I get to go first?
Yeah, I think you should go first.
I want to go first. So if I have superpowers, I want to live in the DC universe. And if I don't have superpowers, I still want to live in the DC universe because Marvel is awful to live in. Like, why would you want to live in the Marvel universe? Like, it's just a bad place. Now, granted, it's not fair that in the DC universe, there's always this constant crisis thing going on. So people are getting murdered left and right all the time and getting reset. But it's still better than the Marvel universe if you live in New York City. Just saying. Like, who wants to live in New York City in the Marvel universe? It's a bad idea. It's just a terrible idea. I mean, I suppose you're okay if you live in the Midwest because Superman lives there. So, I mean, it's chill. Like, in the DC universe, that is. Also, like, in the Marvel universe, like, whatever bad happens in the breadbasket of the United States in the Marvel universe, nothing really.
Well, I was going to say the Hulk went through his change in like Nevada, Arizona area.
Yeah, that's the South.
It's not quite, that's not breadbasket,
yeah.
But
yeah,
it's not New York City, at least.
Las Vegas had a rough time with Hulk, at least on one occasion.
Yeah.
So I guess the answer is if I don't have powers, I want to live in the middle of nowhere in one of these universes because it ups my likelihood to live a lot longer. But if I have superpowers, it's totally DC because, you know, they're basically modern gods.
Yeah, pretty much. How about you, Jared?
I would have to say I'm going with Chris's thinking on this because I would rather live in DC under either circumstance. Part of which is that DC has all of these cities that don't actually exist in our real world. So, like, I totally wouldn't want to live in Gotham or Bloodhaven. But I'm sure there's some sort of Midwestern city that exists out there that is just completely idyllic until a superhero shows up. So that's where I would want to live.
What's the Flash's city? Because isn't he supposed to be like Midwest?
Yeah, Central City and Keystone City don't seem like they would be that bad because most of Flash's villains also have that, like, we don't kill anyone unless we really have to thing. So they're just they're blue collar supervillains. They just want to get money from their crimes. They don't necessarily want to, like, murder half the city or take over the world or anything. They just, you know, they're hardworking blue-collar criminals. So, yeah, and Marvel, unfortunately, the biggest problem with Marvel is much closer to our real world. So I think it's an indication of the real world, how much we would rather live in DC right now than the Marvel universe.
Yeah, that is true.
So, Ange, where would you prefer to live?
See, I grew up a Marvel kid, so I know the Marvel universe a lot better than I know the DC universe. And after having seen Black Panther last weekend, it's like, oh, I just want to go visit Wakanda. Can I please go visit Wakanda? So I think for me, I would pick the Marvel universe because, yeah, it's pretty rough. And if I had superpowers, I'd probably be a mutant. And life for mutants is pretty bad, depending upon who's writing your book. But the Marvel universe is the one that calls to me because it's grounded in a reality that is very close to ours. But just around the corner is the fantastical and the mystical. And, you know, these amazing things that are just, you know, boom, out of nowhere. It's like there's Wakanda, there's the Savage Lands, there's whatever the hell is going on with Doctor Strange. And to me, it's like, I wouldn't want to live in the DC murderverse that they've been putting in the movies. It's like, if you gave me Young Justice, yeah, sure, I'll take that. But the what they've been doing in the movies, nah, I'll step back from
that. Yeah.
So let's move on to our main topic. Anyone who knows me knows I love my superheroes, as you could tell from the previous conversation. So I was pretty excited to see your review of the Sentinel Comics role-playing game starter kit. Can you give us a rundown on your review and what the game is about?
All right. So the Sentinel Comics role-playing game is a role-playing game that is set in the Sentinel Comics universe, which was originally created around the card game that Greater Than Games put out. and it expanded out into Sentinel Comics Tactics, which is a miniatures game. They have online apps that where you can play the card game in video game form on tablets or even on PCs. And the next area that they're branching out to is having this role-playing game. They also currently have a podcast called the Letters Page, where they just discuss various things about the universe of Sentinel Comics. So all of this is this pre-existing world, and the creators of the card game have created an extremely dense pre-existing setting. They went through great pains to create like this thought process going all the way back to like World War II and how when all these characters first appeared and even the names of the titles that they appeared in. They actually have a document now where they pin down where all of these characters, like these comics were in the 90s, these were in the early 2000s. I mean, they have this mapped out, this fictional, it's not just the fictional universe, but also the fictional publishing history of the universe mapped out in incredible degree. And that's what they talk about in the podcast. The RPG, the product that I reviewed is actually a starter kit. It is not the full RPG. They're still waiting to kickstart that, and it may not be out until early next year. But this is a starter kit to give you an idea of what the mechanics for this is. What they have in it is they have six characters that are established characters from the setting, and then they have a multi-part adventure that is in this, and each chapter of the adventure is built to run for about 2 hours, and they're chained together to where the beginning and the end are set, but the issues that you do in the middle will change, and they're all set up, the adventures are actually set up to look like comic books. And it's actually a really nice way that they formatted that. It's I think it's really ingenious to have comic book adventures that literally look like, I mean, they're numbered like this issue of this comic. And you basically, you play through this event that is taking place after a big event that's going to close out the card game line, because they're doing one last product for the card game line that's coming out, and that's going to set up this new era. Yeah, so this starter kit is basically to introduce the mechanics, but there's not necessarily character creation rules or anything like that. But it does show you how they're going to structure adventures, how powers and abilities are going to work, and things of that nature.
It looks pretty slick, and I do know I have a few friends who are pretty into the card game, and I know whenever we have played, they can recite the backstory of the character that I'm playing, and you know, their relationship to whatever villain we're fighting, and just, it's like, I'm like, where are you guys even getting all of this information? Because it's like, really, they're into it just as much as somebody would be into, like, the Marvel Universe or the DC Universe.
Yeah, definitely. And that's one thing. They've done this with this. And the only other thing that comes to mind where you have a fictional gaming product that has this comic book universe that I can think of that is that detailed is Green Ronin's Freedom City and, you know, all Earth Prime. That is very much like this, where there is just this incredible amount of detail going all the way back into the fictional comics history, where there is almost as much detail in that as there is following DC or Marvel all these years.
Can we also talk about who designed this game? Like, there's some super heavy hitters.
Oh yeah,
that are on the design team. Like, I know some of them too, but like Philip Anton Menard, like, he's an excellent designer. If I remember correctly, he worked on a lot of the Cortex stuff in the past. Dave Chalker is an amazing game designer. He designed Get Bit. He was the guy who was in charge of Critical Hits, the blog that ousted Gnome Stew 1 year for best blog. also worked on Marvel's Heroic Roleplaying. He helped design Civil War and things like that. I mean, Clark Valentine's on it. Like, that he's designed a ton of Fate stuff and a bunch of Cortex stuff. Like, and Cam Banks. I mean, Cam Banks is on the design team for this game. So, I mean, there you go. I mean, if you don't know who Cam Banks is, I don't know what to tell you. Like,
It sounded like this game is kind of a spiritual successor to Marvel Heroic, and takes a lot of its cues from a combination of Fate and Cortex.
It does. There is a set range of actions, a lot like how Fate organizes their actions, but you have die steps to rate your abilities for things. So it is taking a lot. It's taking a lot of Cortex and Fate and really kind of merging those two together. The other thing that I really like about the way any given scene in the setting is set up is you have a scene tracker, and the scene tracker progresses from green to yellow to red. At the end of that scene tracker, a scene is over. In other words, if you start fighting a villain, you don't fight that villain until you defeat the villain. You fight that villain until the scene tracker is over. And they talk about in there how the key design for this is to make sure that the heroes have multiple things that they want to accomplish. So you're not just fighting the villain. You may be fighting the villain and trying to disarm a bomb, or fighting the villain and trying to save people in a burning building, so that they have to make some decisions. So things have to go very well, or they have to make some trade-offs before that scene tracker runs out, because at the end of that scene tracker, it will tell you the villain gets away or the bomb goes off, depending on what they decided to work on in that particular scene. And I kind of like that, because there are times when if you get into a traditional structure for how a lot of role-playing games work, you know, you start your rounds and everyone just does their thing until the scene is over. But sometimes that's not really how comic books model things.
Right.
There's always that point at which where someone has to decide something and they turn around and, oh my gosh, the villain's gone, but at least we disarmed the bomb. And this does have that structure in it to model that.
That's interesting. That's interesting. I definitely want to give it a try sometime. Because I know, like you say, not all comic books are structured like role-playing games are structured. And I know when I've run masks before, I've had to like cut the players off a little as they're starting to dig into the minutiae of playing out every little scene post-fight. It's like, no. We're going to smash cut here. We're going to just jump into the next scene and not worry about, you know, the minutiae that happened. We don't need to do that. We can do that as we get into the next scene. We mentioned this before we started recording. I'm very keen on creation rules. Do they plan on putting character creation rules in this when they get to the full thing?
All we really know at this point is that there's going to be a Kickstarter for a full core rulebook. So we haven't really gotten a lot about that, other than that they have mentioned several times in the podcast that they're expecting people to play their own characters.
Okay.
It's not just going to be you're playing someone from the Sentinel Comics. In fact, one of the big changes that's happening in the card game is setting it up to where the Freedom 5, which is the big Avengers Justice League analogy team, is kind of stepping back and creating a facility to train new heroes to deal with more threats so that they're not the ones that are always responding to things. And that's kind of the jumping off point for the RPG, where you're going to be these people that are being trained by this organization to go out and do these things.
Okay, that's really cool.
I'm going to say, based on that, just that right there, there's going to be character creation in the game. And I'm also pretty sure, based on the fact that a lot of these people that are working on this game worked on the Marvel Heroic role-playing game, are going to be like, yeah, we should probably put character creation in the game, based on the fact that everybody's biggest complaint about Marvel Heroic role-playing was there wasn't character creation in the game. It just makes sense.
Yeah, I've always said, you know, I love Rogue. I love Nightcrawler. I don't want to play Rogue and Nightcrawler. I want to play my own characters in that universe. You know, I want to do that, take my own idea and see what happens to it in that universe.
I actually don't have that problem with comic book role-playing games. Like, if I'm playing in the Marvel universe, I don't really have a problem being Spider-Man. Like, that's fun for me.
I go back and forth. I usually, for one-shots, I'm pretty cool with playing canon characters. But for a campaign, I kind of want to put my own spin on it.
I was just going to say, I had run Civil War for the Marvel Heroic game. And I will say, at least for my take on the event and how it played out, it was nice to get people that played those characters and were playing them based on how they thought the characters would have done things, rather than maybe how the comics had them doing things in Civil War.
That is fascinating. The reason that I don't have a problem playing characters that are in those worlds is because all these characters have had multiple writers on them. So everyone's putting their own spin on them anyway. So like, it's my chance to put my spin on a character for a campaign. So I get to be the writer of that character for a while, which, in my opinion, is a pretty cool thing when you think about how comics get created. So it's like, all right, man, I get to do my run of being a writer on the Avengers with Spider-Man and Wolverine and Cap and Iron Man. Like, and then other people get to put their spin on those characters. So that's, I mean, I completely get why people want to make their own characters in those worlds. I actually don't think it's as important to me anyway, but that's why people like role-playing games, I suppose, so they can make their own characters and put them in the worlds. At that point, I'm like, why aren't we just playing something like Masks or you know, some other game where we can just drop our own characters in there and make stuff from scratch? Because then we don't have to worry about all of that stuff around it getting in the way.
I'm also heavily influenced by I've been chasing after the perfect superhero RPG pretty much as long as I have been gaming. And one of the first superhero RPGs I got into was Champions. And at the time, I was in college. I played with a bunch of other 20-somethings. And there was very much an attitude of, they didn't want people playing the canon characters because they didn't want to have to deal with somebody doing it wrong. And so that kind of proprietary arrogance fed a lot of my early attitudes about superhero RPGs.
That's so weird.
Well, I mean, it was the 90s. I gamed with a lot of dudes. They were pretty arrogant about their beliefs, about their, you know, fan stuff they loved. So they wouldn't want to play in a game where you've got Wolverine and someone's playing him wrong. It's like, you know, there was very much that attitude of, we're going to play a game that is almost exactly like the New Mutants, but you're not allowed to play any of the New Mutants because you do it wrong.
That's so weird. See, that's the kind of stuff that bothers me. I'm like, part of the fun of it, I mean, part of the fun of like Phase Rip and like Saga was the fact that you could play those characters, and they played, especially Saga, from what I hear, I never got to play Saga, like they played well, like Spider-Man played like Spider-Man, and like power-wise, and if you played his attitude, like it worked out exceptionally well. So if you could be kind of snarky and whatnot and care about your peoples and such, like then you could play Spider-Man, and it worked.
I've played a lot of Saga. It's a little removed from the books because the guy who used to run it that I kind of learned how to play it from took out a little, you know, some of the more crunchy aspects of it, because it was a game created in the 90s. So it still had a lot of those old school ideas still attached to things. But I've played it, and it does work really well to bring those characters to life. We mostly created our own characters, but it still was, it's very good at doing that superhero thing.
The second RPG that I ever ran was Marvel Superheroes, and I ran so much of that. The very first published adventures I ever ran were the Cosmic Trilogy that they put out for that, which, if you don't know Marvel Superheroes, you don't know what the Cosmic Trilogy is. You probably know it if you did, because it was this awesome 3-part storyline that dealt with Thanos before the Infinity Gauntlet ever even came out in Marvel Comics, and it was just this great story. And the pre-gens that they gave you were people like Beta Ray Bill and Thor and Doctor Strange and Silver Surfer. I remember running that, and it was a lot of fun. And a lot of my time when I ran that game was people playing established characters, and because that was kind of the thing that we wanted to do. We did Marvel team up with Punisher. Which was great. If you know how the mechanics in that game work, as soon as someone kills someone, your karma zeroes out.
Yep.
So the joke was, since it was Marvel, team up with Punisher, it was a race to see how much you could get done with the karma pool before the Punisher player zeroed out the karma pool.
Yeah. Anytime Wolverine was in a game, they would always say red for karma, right? Red for karma. Cause that was about to happen. that was Phil Vecchione and all of his cronies. I suppose that would be a thing. Ask Bob Everson sometime. He'll tell you. Oh, it's so funny. Those guys. So Ange, where do you want to go now?
Well, I brought you in because I know you've run Masks and have a fondness for Masks, which is one of the current superhero RPGs out there. And I figured we could talk about some of the other options that are out there. Like Mutants and Masterminds is still being published, I believe. I have some friends who are deep into that one. In fact, they've had a regular campaign where they were playing Legion of Superheroes characters. And I get to hear stories of that one fairly frequently. But what are your thoughts on you know, because the chasing after the perfect superhero RPG, finding that right balance between the mechanics and that feel you're trying to get out of those comic book stories.
There is no perfect superhero role-playing game because superheroes as a genre is multi-genred. So, I mean, superheroes is often the trapping that you put on top of it to tell a bunch of different kinds of stories. I mean, DC tends to tell a lot of times basically almost Roman and Greek pantheon god type stories. Like they're essentially as much as this is going to sound funny, they're essentially the new gods. I mean, that's a play on words because there's also the new gods, but I mean, if you like, that's who those characters are. They're like modern incarnations in a lot of ways of like Zeus and Hera in them. And the Marvel stories are much more personal, right? Like they're very, very different from character to character. Like Thor's stuff is very cosmic and almost, I mean, if you get to the Jason Aaron stuff, it's almost like metal, heavy metal comic book type stuff and fantastical and out there, right? Like, but, you know, contrast that with Peter Parker's stories, and they're very different kinds of stories. Like, those are stories about what happens when you have power and then you have people that you care about. Like, it's that whole, you know, great power comes great responsibility. They're telling Shakespeare dramas sometimes in those kind of books too. Like, and they're telling, you know, stories about drug addiction, and they're telling stories about
civil rights allegories of the X-Men.
Yeah, there you go. Like, that is all about, like, what happens with racism and whatnot. Like, it's thinly veiled stories about that stuff. So how can you tell the perfect comic book story with one game system when you are basically telling every story that's possible with the skin and the trappings of superheroes on top of it? Like, it's almost impossible to do.
I had a conversation with some folks recently, and a friend was saying, he's like, I suck at running superhero games. And I'm like, no, you do not suck, because if you did, I wouldn't game with you. And two, it's like, I think your problem isn't that you suck at running superhero games. It's that you don't know the superhero story you actually want to be telling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've actually run into that with my own GMing. I did a campaign once where it was meant to be very heroes-esque, with the world not really having superpowers and the players developing powers and figuring it out. And I didn't quite parse out the full ramifications of the world I was setting up. And when the players took those ideas and were running with them, I was like, this isn't the game I thought I was going to be running. And I kind of flaked on it.
I mean, like, that's the problem, right? Like, the systems don't necessarily help tell the kinds of stories that you're looking to tell because they're superpowers. So real quick, masks. Masks is a really good thing to play basically young superheroes. It's about teenage drama with superpowers. I mean, it does Young Justice really well, like, because that is what Young Justice is.
Yeah. Really well.
Mutant City Blues, I see that you have it on the list. It's investigative, and it has that superhero trappings to it. I would imagine it would do a very good job of doing Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
Or Jessica Jones style games, like, where it's about investigation and private eye work and things like that, but yet it has superhero powers and trappings on top of it. Champions and Mutants and Masterminds, they seem like team up games. So they're going to do the Justice League and they're going to do the Avengers books really well, I think, because they're about teams working together and not necessarily a lot of, I mean, if you want to bring character interaction to it, you have to do that yourself in a lot of ways. There's not a lot of mechanics for that in those games, as far as I know.
Right. Those types of games really fulfill the needs of the player who wants to tactically and mechanically create the character or put that character into play with those certain powers. It's not necessarily about the story. It's about the tactics and the mechanics.
Yeah, but that'll do the Justice League versus Darkseid invading the Earth, or the Justice League fighting Warworld in space. Like, it'll do that stuff pretty well, I would think.
I actually had a DC Adventures game that I ran for a year, and my teams they fought Mongol and the Warworld people and Darkseid by the end of it, because I'm running DC. It's not like I'm not going to use those guys.
Exactly.
As a slight interjection, there was an Origins, I think it was 2 years ago, where I inadvertently signed up for what was essentially the same game twice. I signed up to do a two-table Savage Worlds game, two-table crossover game in the afternoon, and it turned out it was a table of Marvel characters and a table of DC characters, and then in the end they would come together to fight the big bad guys, who turned out to be Brainiac and Ultron. And then that evening, I played a Mutants and Mastermind two-table crossover game with a table of Marvel characters and a table of DC characters who came together in the end to fight the bad guys of Brainiac and Ultron.
That's funny.
It was really cool to see the different ways the mechanics of those systems worked and the way that those characters were brought to life in the different games. It was a lot of fun.
So I guess my answer to the question is, like, there is no single game that will do everything. So you need to collect a bunch of different ones. What about you, Jared? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's going to be really what your preferences are and what you're planning on running at that moment. I've heard people say, for example, Mutants and Masterminds is really good as a role-playing game to show you what it would be like to live in a world where people have superpowers and or superheroes. But Marvel Heroic was more about what it would be like to be playing out a comic book, which are two separate things.
Right.
Masks, as the one that's run Masks the least out of all three of us, I saw this discussed in the Google Plus community there, and essentially there were some people asking about powers and how they work and everything. And the discussion pretty much turned to Masks is really a game about teenagers who happen to be superheroes, not superheroes who happen to be teenagers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's a lens that you have to look at each of these games and realize what they're trying to capture.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that boils it down. And I think we can probably move towards our outro.
Andrew, are you sad? Are you sad that there is no perfect superhero game out there?
I am. Because I've just... It's one of those things where I'm constantly, like, looking for the next good one. You know, like, I love Marvel Saga. I love the quick and easy way you can pull characters together with the character creation system from that game. And how easy it is, and how the cards make you think beyond what's just on your sheet. I love the fact that you can build almost any concept you can think of in Mutants and Masterminds, but it's way too crunchy for me. Back to Marvel Saga, it's like it works great in that one-shot mode, but you can't really, doing a campaign gets difficult. I love Masks, but it's not something I can bring to every table. Like, I can't do teenagers with my regular group. They just don't dig it. It's just, there's so many out there, and I'm just like, I just want that one to fit the niche that I really want. And you're right, it doesn't actually exist, and it shouldn't exist.
The game that disappoints me the most of superhero games is Worlds in Peril.
I agree.
Yeah.
Because Worlds in Peril has the chassis, in my opinion, to do pretty much anything by just adding in a different move sheet. A slightly modified move sheet so that you can play pretty much any kind of superhero game that you want to play. And the game just doesn't work right now. Like, yeah. And I don't think it'll ever get a second edition because of things in the background, because of the people who designed it together. But that is unfortunate.
I loved the mechanics in that where you could spend, I forget what it was called, but your bonds to different, I might have been bonds, but where you could spend your bonds to different people to do things. And in uh-huh. order to get those back, you had to actually, like, if you spent your bond to Aunt May to in a fight, then you had to spend time with Aunt May later to get that bond back. And I love that because it was one of the best things to drive people doing the non-superhero aspect of their character. Uh-huh. But yeah, the rest of that game, when I read through it, I could not get that to work in my head.
It is, it was burning bonds. You could burn bonds to succeed at things.
Wow.
Yep, it was great.
Yeah, I kind of missed that one because I wasn't aware of it until I started hearing people complain about it. So I'm like, okay, I still may give it a try at some point, but.
Well, now that I've made this show an episode way too long, Ange, why don't you move us along?
So let's give special thanks to our Patreon backers, awesome Gnome Stew supporters like Duncan Thompson, Philippe Marcel, and Jeffrey Lees. Thanks to their help and others like them, this show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can become a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. This ad brought to you by the high insurance premiums you would have to pay if you lived in a world of actual superheroes.
No.
I'm sorry, sir, but your policy doesn't cover your Honda Civic being used as a blunt weapon in a fight between behemoths.
But I took out the specific Hulk versus Abomination policy.
Yes, but this was the Thing versus She-Hulk. That's not covered. If you're enjoying the Gnomecast, you'll probably like many of the other Misdirected Mark shows. Here's one to check out.
The Wednesday Evening Podcast All-Stars, Brett, Tom, Kevin, Chris, and Emily get together to play games that get edited down to an audio drama for your ears. Join this crew of all-star players as they create stories from the games you love.
Woo! Yeah, I got a shout-out. It's weird.
Hey, give it a listen. It's a great actual play. You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com, at GnomeStew on Twitter, and GnomeStew on Facebook. Jared, where else can we find you on the internet?
If you look up Knight Errant JR, you will find my What Do I Know blog, and that's where most of the stuff that I post that doesn't go on Gnome Stew goes.
Sounds good. Chris?
You could catch me at Misdirected Mark on Twitter, at The Light 101 on Twitter, on Facebook, Misdirected Mark. on the website when it exists again, hopefully by the time you hear this, because it won't get out unless the website exists again. So www.misdirectedmark.com. Those are the best places to catch me. Facebook, Google Plus, the Google Plus community, misdirectedmark.com. All those places, just tag me there and I will respond to whatever you need or say. Also, the website, leave a comment. What about you, Ange? Where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Orikes13, O-R-I-K-E-S-13. And you can find me hanging out in the Misdirected Mark community, too. I'm out there. I'm not that hard to miss. So, hey, do you guys think we avoided the stew this week?
I mean, if we didn't, somebody's going to reboot us again in about 6 months.
That's true. Also, John's doing a TED Talk today, so, I mean, he didn't hear this, so I think we're fine.
Yeah, John's totally busy.